21st Century HR is a podcast exploring how to build better businesses through modern people practices and approaches. It's brought to you by my firm, Amplify. Amplify provides HR executive search and strategic consulting services that help companies build better organizations. From employer brand development and execution to global talent strategies, Amplify develops custom solutions that help clients from Hootsuite to SpaceX optimize their recruiting capabilities. Amplify also hosts a new community for HR leaders called the Ecosystem. The Ecosystem was designed to bring modern HR leaders around the world together to share ideas, inspiration, and support. Learn more at amplifytalent.com. Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 3 of 21st Century HR Live. We've learned a lot over the first 2 episodes. That's a wealth of knowledge to build on, and I'm excited that all that brings us to this episode with a good friend of mine, Caitlin Holloway. Caitlin is a rad human first and foremost, but she is currently the partner at Initialized Capital. Prior to that, she ran People for Reddit, and we've had a chance to collaborate on a variety of podcasts and projects over the last, really couple of years. And so big fan of hers, big fan of her work, and really excited to get into a conversation with her in this episode. Just a quick reminder, this is an interactive show. So if you have questions for Caitlin, wherever you're streaming this, go ahead and ask in the comments. If this tool operates correctly, I will see your comments and I will do my best to bring them to Caitlin while we're on air. So let me bring her on. Hey.
Hello. Hello. Good morning. Hello.
Yeah. All right. So Caitlin is here. I'm going to turn it over to you just to give a brief intro and background on you for viewers who may not be familiar.
Excellent. I'm still trying to figure out how to do my new intro, but let's give it a whirl here. So I'm Caitlin Holloway. I'm a partner at Initialized Capital, which is a VC firm based here in San Francisco. We specialize in seed stage investments. We are thesis agnostic, which means we are putting our money into phenomenal people. Prior to this new weird life shift, life role, career shift, I had been a practitioner and operator as a people executive in tech for the last 10 years. Prior to that, I did a bunch of other weird stuff. And here we are today. All paths lead back to Lars.
Yeah, and I think I definitely recommend viewers to check out a past 21st Century HR podcast that Caitlin and I recorded, because we get into our whole career story and background, and it was fascinating for me when I was even looking at your LinkedIn profile. I think the first time we connected, it was even cooler when we had a chance to talk about from animation to everything else. So definitely encourage you to check that out. So obviously these are crazy days. No need to give a double click on that, because everybody's living the same thing. For you, you moved from Reddit to Initialized, right around the beginning of this year. So you're kind of there and you're still, really in your orientation period. And then this hits. So what is that like? Like, how do you come into, it's already hard enough when you're onboarding as an executive into a new company and a new role, and you're learning, it's a new space and industry for you. So you're kind of learning the whole industry as that's happening. And then this happens. So walk me through that. What was that transition? And I shouldn't even say in past tense. What is that transition like for you, as right, kind of navigating onboarding into a new role in a new industry in the current climate?
Totally. Yeah, it's been a very weird, interesting time to have made this leap. None of us saw this coming, obviously. But here we are, and here you are in my bedroom. So things are weird. Things are not as usual. But yeah, I would say, thankfully I had a pre-existing relationship with Alexis, who's one of the founders of Initialized. And so coming into it, he knew what I was capable of. I think if I didn't have that though, I would be feeling fairly uncomfortable. It's a small team. There are only 18 folks at Initialized. And those early days were, me just trying to get acclimated, get to know the team a little bit, understand what my job is. I've been doing the same thing essentially for the last decade, and I knew how to do what I was supposed to do. I knew when I showed up every day, the impact that I was supposed to be having, the relationships that I knew I had to nurture, which cow paths I had to pave, and which areas I was supposed to be breaking. And now coming into this, I've reverted back to like my old school self, where I'm like, how do I get an A? How do I prove my value? How do I prove my worth? How do I show up? And then when we went into, to crisis mode, you know, the world went into crisis mode, I had one mission and one mission only, which was, where can I be of service? Thank goodness having an HR skill set at this time, from a business perspective, has been really definitely an asset, to say the least. And so the good news is I felt like I have been able to jump in and help our portfolio founders. We have over 300 companies that we support. And, you know, it ranges the gamut from, we need to figure out how to reduce headcount costs and what do those options look like before getting to layoff, all the way to, oh my gosh, overnight we blew up and we have to go gangbusters, to, we used to make shoes and now we want to make masks. How do we do that? And how do we staff appropriately? So luckily, I love a good burning building. So running straight in and doing that, as opposed to kind of the slow usual, like, where do I fit in? So anyway, it's been hard but good.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild. I think when you're, especially in a role like yours, where you're working really across an entire portfolio of companies that are all at different stages and they all have different, they're all impacted in different ways. As you said, you know, some are in survival mode and they're, you know, restricting and trying to contain costs everywhere they can and having reductions, and others are having complete pivots. You know, I ordered my Adams mask, so that should be coming soon. So that's the reference you made around going from making shoes to making masks, to companies that are, you know, now they're suddenly in massive demand based on the climate that everybody's in. So how do you, you know, when you're interacting with those founders, I think maybe even particularly the ones that are in crisis mode, right? Because I imagine, you know, you may have a lot of, you have seasoned companies and you also have some portfolios with first-time founders. And obviously nobody and at any level of experience has been through something quite like this, but especially for the earlier stage founders, what advice do you have for them? Like when they're coming to you, particularly with the, looking for advice on the people side of, you know, this whole situation, what are some, you know, tips, wisdom, you know, past learnings that you have that you can call upon to kind of, you know, give them some advice and guide them through it?
Totally. Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind, and I'm sure that we'll talk about this a little bit later, but it really has been this call to arms from the people operators in the world. You know, our networks are so rich with experience and watching everyone show up and help in the last, you know, what, 6 weeks has just been phenomenal. And so there are things that I haven't experienced as an operator. And so being able to draw from our network and our pool, you know, you have one of the best open source documents on the internet as everything started to break out. Even in the very beginning, you know, who knew what a pandemic playbook was, or, you know, who had a template for that, you know, 8 weeks ago. So being able to draw on our own network has been incredibly helpful. But I would say the thing that I think I have discovered the most, now that I have enough data points and I've talked with enough founders, and to be honest, it's at every stage, whether they're in crisis or whether they are just, you know, holding steady, has been what we've talked about forever as practitioners, which is your culture really reveals itself when things go to shit. And so helping them figure out how to amplify the great that's happening within their organization and how to adjust the things that maybe aren't being, they aren't serving them as well. And so it's so interesting, for as much as there is like on the ground tactical shit that needs to be done right now, I've actually had a lot of very heartfelt, deep culture conversations with founders around revisiting missions and visions and values. I know that this sounds so silly, like, well, oh my gosh, you know, if a company is going through a really hard time, will they have time to talk about these things? You know, culture comes later. But the reality is culture has to come first right now. We have to lead with that. And so I get asked, you know, is now really the right time to you know, wordsmith a mission statement or a vision statement? The answer is yes. You are asking these people for their precious minutes in their day to show up in the midst of a crisis, in the midst of, you know, experiencing trauma. Let's call this what it is, to show up and be present every day with your work and be engaged with your work. And so if that North Star isn't bright, shiny, and clear, it does not matter. And so working with founders around the language and how they engage with their team, you know, simple things like the internal meeting cadence. How often are you talking to your team? What are you sharing? How transparent are you being? How are you living those values? And how are you bringing that mission to life for them every single day so that they don't feel as conflicted about the minutes that they are spending, you know, with their faces frozen in a smile for Zoom meetings for 8 hours a day, especially their parents. And so, I would say I've been very heartened to see the amount of founders that are willing to go deep and willing to take a good look at themselves and how they're showing up as leaders.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great point. And I think when you look at your mission, your vision and values, there are companies, obviously a lot of companies are contracting, a lot of companies are still hiring. And so I've had some conversations with people just around how they think about employer brand, you know, even right now. And, you know, for one, I'm like, any of your program shit, throw it out. You know, nobody cares about custom kombucha. Nobody cares about any of those perks. Like basically employer brand is now about CSR. It's what are you doing for your employees? How are you communicating? What are you doing for your local communities? What are you doing for the greater good? Like that's all anybody really cares about in addition to the fact that you're hiring. So I think from and that really connects again to that mission, vision, values, right? How are you showing up, especially for your teams? What is their experience? And I think whenever we're on the other side of that, of this whole thing, that's something that a lot of people are going to be looking to, right? It's like, how did companies behave in this crisis? How did they treat their employees? How did they treat their teams? Did they do the right thing? Did they do at least their best, you know, to do the right thing? And this is difficult, right? And companies, especially when you look at layoffs and reductions, like that's just something that companies are going to have to do. And it's naive to think that, you know, everybody can retain all of their employees and survive. They can't, but there's a way to do that. There's a way to approach that. And I think, you know, you mentioned kind of open source to me, and I know you and I have both been open source nerds. I think we actually first connected years ago through HR open source.
We did.
That you were sharing at Reddit. And so, I know that's in our DNA, but I think what's been really interesting to watch, particularly from an HR leadership perspective, is how the community has really come together, open their playbooks, open their resources, open articles, have candid conversations around helping each other navigate through these, especially as you see more seasoned operators helping some of the less seasoned operators who've never been through anything remotely like this. And I think that's huge. And I think whenever we are on the other side of this, you know, the days of siloed HR and people functions are dead. You know, if you're not a practitioner and a leader who's opening up your playbook and willing to share and willing to collaborate, willing to open up yourself, you don't have a future in the field, I don't think. So I think that that there are definitely going to be some kind of seismic shifts in the field on the other side of this. And I think that's one of them. For you, like just getting into quarantine life, right? Like there's so many interesting things that you've got going on. And I've got a couple questions for you. And again, if you're watching this right now and you have questions for Caitlin, just add them in the comment section. I'll do my best to cover them on air. But first off, Instagram. So, you know, you have your whole Tales from the Bunker series. And when you started it, so if you don't follow Caitlin on Instagram, you can share your handle so people can fix that. But, you know, early in this, you started this series on your story. It's called Tales from the Bunker. And, you know, Caitlin's, you know, quarantining at home with her husband and two kids, and they were hilarious. They were episodic. I mean, this is legit, you know, story of each day. And I was like, that's really cool. There's no way you're going to be able to sustain this. And I was totally wrong. You've sustained this. So like, where did the idea for that come from? How do you, you know, it almost, when you're watching it as an outsider, it almost looks like it's programmed, right? Like there's so many interesting things happening throughout the day, which I know is not the case, and it's totally organic, but just take me inside that a little bit.
Well, here, let me, I promised mimosas to myself. So let's start there. Fresh hand squeeze from little cuties, because I thought we had orange juice and we didn't. We are in survival mode in this house. We live in San Francisco. We have a small apartment in North Beach, and we have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, Luca and Juno, and they aren't school aged yet. Luca will start kindergarten in the fall, and I realized very quickly that if we didn't have structure, we were going to kill each other pretty quickly. It was going to melt down very, very fast. You know, I was trying to figure out what it was going to be like. Like, oh, is this going to be like, you know, winter break where by the end of it, like everyone is like pulling out their hair and we're all ready for routine again? Is this going to be like just a prolonged like sick week, you know, like when someone in the house gets sick and it's kind of the mood is down, but you're still sick of each other at the end of it and everyone's ready for routine. And so I, fun fact, I used to be an elementary school teacher. And so I went back to my old days and I was like, okay, we need structure. We need structure every day. How are we going to make sure that we're, you know, developing these kids without, you know, getting overly structured where, you know, they aren't enjoying life and they aren't able to be kids. But I was really just trying to avoid screen time or like the epic prolonged screen time. And so we took their sit and spin, the old little spinners that you would sit on, and we put it on a giant post-it note that I had from some of my workshops that I run, like the big post-it pads. And so around the spinner, there are two circles, and one circle has themes. And so we picked anything that the boys thought, you know, was mildly interesting or what we knew they were into, like pirates or the Wild West or Harry Potter, whatever, insert theme here. And then the second wheel has different academic disciplines. So math, reading, science, speech and debate, theater, whatever the academic disciplines are. So we spin the wheel twice every day, once to find our theme, and then again to figure out which academic discipline we'll be focusing on. And then we do the academic discipline like three or four times to, you know, keep it alive and moving. So if you have never done, cowboy science, it's very exciting. I think you can probably hear my animals outside now. But it's been so much fun. And so I started documenting every day. And I should say, I'm not a selfie girl. I don't usually post a lot of what's going on in my life unless I'm traveling. And so I started documenting as if we were on vacation. Just, you know, everything from like a boring, you know, morning breakfast through whatever was happening during the day, just trying to get little clips. I think most parents do this. We just don't publish them because they aren't very exciting to anyone else. And then I took a tip from Pixar, actually, around creativity and innovation. And it's a silly thing that we used to talk about on the story team, but you would say, you know, when you're kind of hazing someone to a story team, you'll sit down and be like, cool, now draw me the coolest thing you've ever drawn in your life. And people sit down and they freak out. And they're like, I can't create like this. What are you doing to me? And then they come back and they say, okay, now draw me the coolest three-eyed alien I've ever seen. And suddenly people could create. And so by simply adding boundaries to something, you're able to create something far more magical than you were to just sit down and try to open or unlock innovation. So we have the wheel, we call it the wheel deal. We have the wheel, we have done everything with just what we have in our home. You know, we don't want to overload the postal workers by sending us extra stuff that we don't need. And so it's been really, really fun and funny. And so all those little snaps, all of those little moments throughout the day, I string together every night as I'm putting the boys down or going to bed myself. And now everyone will the time I go to bed. It's my journaling. It's the modern bunker journal of a mom. So it just is taking these little moments throughout the day and trying to figure out what the theme was or like what the story is in the day. And some days are really good and some days are, you know, shitty. Like yesterday we totally phoned it in. I think her theme was supposed to be rock and roll. And in my head, I had grand plans, like at the start of the day where it was like, we were going to, you know, get all greased up and like, you know, have a stage and get out the karaoke machine. And like, I had all of these plans, but the day just didn't go that way. And so, yesterday the theme ended up at the end of the day being, okay, sure. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think, having okay, sure. And TV moments. And I mean, look, everybody I think is just taking this as a day by day thing. And I think, and you go through different stages of this, right? Like, you know, you have moments where you're like, okay, we're going to have all the structure. This is how every day is going to go. Structure will be good for everybody. And you'll do some of that and then you won't. And totally. You'll have days where everything will just fall apart. And you're like, you're going to watch 3 hours of TV and that's okay. Yep. And so I think the key thing there is really just having some, forgiveness and leeway, right? So that we're not being unfair to ourselves with the expectations and unreasonable for how this will go. And some days you'll crush it and you'll do all the things you aspire to do. And some days you'll do none of those things. And both of them are okay. So I've got one viewer question I want to pull in right now from Lisa Perides on LinkedIn. She's asking, what advice would you give to small businesses working day and night to pivot and innovate to remain relevant without burning out, right? So the companies you mentioned, like not necessarily Adam specifically, but companies that are going through a pivot to try to, you know, survive this. Yeah. And everybody else is kind of, you know, and some companies are furloughed or they're, you know, they're laid off or they're underused. And those are organizations that are putting tremendous amounts of pressure on employees to guide them through the, you know, the pivot.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. Hi, Lisa. I miss you. This is a hard question because it really is very specific to your business. But I would say that the general advice that the partners at Initialize are giving to our own portfolio founders right now are, if you have a technical component to your business, spend that time right now. So for as much as I said, like take the time to do that deep cultural work, you should also be doing the deep technical work. So if something is broken, if something needs to be repaired, pull it out, rebuild it, get back in there. You know, same goes for city infrastructure. You know, watching San Francisco's streets be torn up right now actually feels kind of good because you're like, oh, this is the right time to do it. So if you have a technical component, double down on it, work tirelessly on that. All of the things that, you know, you can switch on when the rest of the world comes back online will be really good. And if you are looking to pivot and stay relevant, tread lightly. You know, I think that there are, for as much as we should be gentle on ourselves, we should be gentle on our businesses. And at this point in time, there are so many companies that are in trauma and crisis that are really just trying to hold steady and figure out what to do. So if you are pivoting your business, don't pivot it and then try to sell to save your business. I think that for as much as you need to pivot to sustain your business, I also think this is a time for being respectful, if that makes sense. So don't pivot and then try to shove a new product down people's throats. No one is signing new contracts right now. Like that's just the reality of it. And so I think that if there is an opportunity for you to pivot, figure out how to do it in a way that is natural and helpful. So, you know, with the Adam shoes, you know, the example that we're using here, they were able to so quickly and, you know, just turn on a dime and change their manufacturing to something that was very, very needed. But they also came out with a component where they're like, look, we're doing this because we can, and we have this luxury. So we're also going to have a back program. So figure out ways that you can help and then see if your business, you know, will align with that as opposed to, you know, how can I grab what's out there and what's available? I think it's challenging.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I mean, you have to, being helpful, I think is really important. Creating something the world needs right now is, I think, the key to a successful pivot, right? Creating something to create something, to create another revenue stream that isn't necessarily meeting any of the needs of you know, consumers and people and just where they are right now. I think that there's not a ton of value there. And at best, at worst, it's predatory. It can be perceived that way. So just things to think about. Our mutual friend, Damon Klotz over at Culture Amp says that your Instagram feed is what the world needs right now. So just wanted to share that little bit of love with you.
Thank you, Damon.
So these are weird. Like we're all locked away in our houses. Well, those of us who have the privilege of being able to work from home, we qualify that. Not all of us are, and a lot of people aren't. And so definitely we owe them a lot of you know, gratitude. And so it is an absolute privilege to be able to work from home. But for those of us who are, what's something that you've learned about yourself in this period of time?
You know, there were a few things that I did when we went into lockdown. I measured our children. Don't know why I did that, but you know, the door that you mark their heights. I don't know what I was thinking. Like I was like, oh, well, if we get let out in a few weeks, it'll be a funny blip. But at this point I'm so excited to measure them again and see, I mean, their shoes don't fit. And I mean, not that we wear shoes anymore, but, you know, I think my mindfulness or my awareness around, my engagement with my children has obviously gone up considerably. There are the obvious ones that are like, wow, so much of the work that we thought couldn't be done remotely can be done. So like, that's really cool. I'm grateful for my own privilege and ability to do so, especially in a new role. I've learned that I am not an extrovert, like at all. Like there's a small group of people that I miss. But like, I'm pretty happy in here. And I don't know if that's even okay to say, but I definitely am not as extroverted as I thought that I was. I miss my family and I miss my friends, of course. I can't wait till, you know, the day I can have a dinner with folks again, but I'm not living on that desperate edge of like, I need contact or I'm going to go crazy. What else? I've learned that my willpower is pretty shit in here. I had 2 cookies for breakfast. I'd stopped drinking at the start of the year and that's out the window. Stopped eating red meat. And I've learned that parenting is as fun as it is challenging. I knew that before, but I think that I know it now in the depths of my soul.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think that so many of those things, especially the thoughts around parenting are just magnified by these circumstances, right? The feelings are more intense. The feelings of fun and joy and excitement are super intense. The feelings of frustration and sadness can hit like that, and those can be really intense. So yeah, I definitely I can relate to all of that. One fun fact about Kaylin and I is we are both members of an elite scooter gang called Los Burdos, and we do have our next question is from one of our gang members, Kyle Lagunas.
Yes.
Los Burdos, and he would like to know what kind of communication cadence should HR departments maintain, right now within organizations? Is there such a thing as too much? Like, what do you think is the sweet spot from a communication standpoint?
That's a great question, Kyle. Thank you so much for asking. I wish we had premeditated this, but thank you for hitting me with a hard question this morning. I think this is the cop-out answer, but I'll take it a step further. The cop-out answer is every company is different and unique. Like you have to make it fit for what your company and your team is. That said, I have seen a remarkable increase in communication from all levels of leadership during this time, which I think is the right move. There are companies who were having all hands monthly and they're now having them weekly. And I think that that's really critical. Changing the structure of what the content of those meetings are and what that looks like is critical. I think that the more you can lean into transparency, the better. I've always been, tip of the spear on pushing for more transparent communications within organizations, but now is you have to. That's my opinion, of course. But I think in terms of too much, yeah, there's a balance for everything. Don't create stuff just to keep me engaged working remotely, especially as someone who is a caregiver. If you have anyone else in your home that you're trying to manage, the last thing you want or need is something else to do or feel obligated to do. And worst of all, creating so much programming internally to keep people engaged, I think can potentially be really damaging from our parental cohort. And I know that I'm hammering on parents really hard right now, only because I'm feeling it so viscerally, but truly, like the FaceTime just can't look the same as it used to. So I would say if your HR teams are, doing their best to create moments and to create connectivity for people, like it's not a bad thing, but make sure that it's known that it's optional, and that it's not required, to do so. But I think critical comms around, state of the union, company, business metrics, and a safe space for people to know when they can click into that connection that they need with their manager, with leadership, and with HR.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great point. I think that the transparency and the openness around state of business, state of affairs, those things are all incredibly important. I think that there is a balance between HR leaders and business leaders who are they're so focused on engagement that they're maybe overthinking that and they're trying to over-engineer that. And that becomes intrusive, particularly for parents, or cohorts like that are caretakers who they just, they have limited hours to really dedicate headspace towards work. And when they're doing that, they want to do that. And when they're done, they don't want to do that, right? So I think making sure that if you create any of those programs for happy hours, and you have some, you know, some employees that do want that, be very clear that it's optional. Be very clear there's no expectations that you're there. And I would say almost over communicate that clarity so that there isn't a feeling of obligation or expectation from the cohorts that that you know just really can't afford to invest in that. So Caitlin, last question for you. So I'm going to be closing every episode with a bit and a theme that I call one good thing. So closing out for you, share one good thing with the viewer, something that could be anything you've read, you saw, you thought, conversation you had, whatever it might be. What's one good thing for you?
One good thing. There's so many good things. Community really this week has been big on my mind. All of the connections that we have, and the different layers of connection and belongingness that we all need to feel, as humans, think about your community cohorts. Think about, the way you connect with the people that live around you that you want to connect with, my husband, and this is my one good thing, and I know that I'm giving it too big of a layup here, but my husband has opened up our second story kitchen window, and he's been serving coffee to our neighbors who are frontline workers with my older son's toy gorilla arm. And it has been absolutely the bright spot of every day since we've been doing it. Being able to connect with the community around us, a community that we've been a part of for 20 years, and in some cases didn't even know our neighbors' names. And so it feels really, really good to know and see that you can be of service and that you can help someone have a better day just by simply opening your window safely. So yeah, one good thing, coffee with a gorilla arm.
Coffee with a gorilla arm. That is amazing. And what you didn't mention, because you are humble, is that's not just a really cool thing that you feel. It's been picked up by national news all across the US, and there's been lots of stories on that. So if you're curious, a quick Google search will yield some interesting stories, and it's awesome that that you all are doing that, because obviously wherever we can support them, and you know, the cool thing is obviously it's helping them, it's giving them coffee, but it's helping, you know, it's giving them another sense of appreciation and connection, and knowing people are supporting them, but also gives all of you and your kids, you know, a sense of giving back and contributing to the community. So it's awesome that you're doing that.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Caitlin, thanks so much for coming on. Next time I'll have a mimosa of my own, so I won't let you drink alone. We'll share that instead of me having this industrial strength coffee, which, you know, hits me at around noon. So hang in there. Thanks for sharing your stories. And we will be back tomorrow, same time, noon, with Lori Rudabin. So hopefully we'll see you there. Thanks so much, everyone. Take care and stay safe.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 21st Century HR. If you want to hear more episodes like this or read stories from the 21st Century HR Fast Company series, go to 21stcenturyhr.com. And if you want to make your podcast just a little more awesome, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or whatever podcast platform your ears desire. You'll find all the subscribe links on the website. And if you enjoy the podcast, do me a favor and share it with your peers, your network, your boss, and your CEO. Help me get the podcast into the ears of anyone who wants to know what HR and recruiting looks like when done really well. They'll thank you for it, and so will I. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode.